The views expressed on the following program do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff and management of KCOD Palm Springs, KCOD Coachella FM, or the Desert Community College District. And hello there, everyone. Welcome to Media Spotlight on KCOD Palm Springs and KCOD Coachella FM. I'm your host, Steve Kelly, and this week we have a very special guest. We're going to head across the country and talk to Josh McCrane. Josh is from Emory University, and a recent survey that he worked on with Gregory Martin from Emory University talked about what happens in a local TV news market when there's only one owner in town. Hey, Josh, how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for talking to me about this research.
It was a great article in the Washington Post. It talked about Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Now, Johnstown is famous for a couple of reasons. Number one, the infamous flood that took place back there in 1889. And number two, it was the fictional home of the Johnstown Chiefs of the infamous hockey movie Slapshot. But in this case, it's more about what went on with you and the surveys that you did with Dr. Martin. Tell us about it and what led you to start doing this sort of work.
Yeah, sure. So we first became interested in Sinclair in general, I think probably last summer when, to be honest with you, I saw the John Oliver skit on what happens when Sinclair buys a station and what they kind of force their the stations to run, the kind of content that they make them run. So I became interested in, you know, what the kind of larger scale effects of this are. And my co-author, Greg, he studies media and politics. He's written about the effect media partisanship has on political behavior, Fox News, that sort of thing. So we started talking and figured out we could probably research this. So what we did is we started to look into what Sinclair does when they buy a station, and then we collected a whole bunch of data on transcripts from Sinclair-owned stations and, well, to be honest, actually every station across the country. And what we wanted to look at was the differences between Sinclair and non-Sinclair-owned stations.
And Sinclair Broadcasting is kind of famous or infamous. They are a family out of Baltimore, the Smith family, and they own a bunch of smaller market stations. We'll get into this in a little while, but they want to buy some major market stations from Tribune Broadcasting, Josh. And one of the things that they're looking to do is put on a certain amount of similar content. They really first hit the prominence when they were really involved in an anti-John Kerry movement 14 years ago. So they're very conservative. They also recently put out that video where you have every local anchor reading a story about fake news. So what did you find that went on in Johnstown when Sinclair moved in?
Well, so we didn't actually just study Johnstown. We studied the entire country over about a 7-month period. I can't really speak to Johnstown in particular. I think the Washington Post story does a really nice job of that. What I can tell you is the kind of on average effect of what happens when Sinclair owns a station and how a station's coverage changes once it's been acquired by Sinclair, which I think is probably indicative of, in general, what's going on in these smaller markets like Johnstown. So what we found is looking at, one, stations that were already owned by Sinclair compared to other stations in the same media market. So we're comparing, you know, the similar stations to each other. We found that stations that are already owned by Sinclair cover about 25% less local politics when compared to national politics. We also find that the kind of coverage is kind of slanted towards the right based on a measure of slant that we created. And we find that when a station is acquired by Sinclair, their coverage shifts in the same direction. It shifts towards the right, and they cover less local politics in favor of more national politics. Those are the kind of big findings that we uncovered. I think one of the more interesting things, though, is the findings that we found on viewership. So one argument that could be made about why Sinclair is doing this is because their viewers in these media markets want this kind of coverage. So Sinclair comes in and they change the coverage and respond to viewer demand. But we don't find any change in viewership. In fact, any change in viewership that we do find is probably in the negative direction, which suggests Sinclair is doing this for a reason other than audience demand.
Yeah. Interesting point. Josh McCrane is our guest on Media Spotlight. He's from Emory University. And Josh, one of the things Sinclair did too is they hired a former Trump campaign guy by the name of Boris Epstein, who is a Russian refugee, and he is very conservative. And a lot of these small market stations are now running his commentary piece in the local news, which is kind of strange, isn't it?
Yeah, it is sort of strange. I think to us it suggests, you know, two possible things. One is that Sinclair does have this, I guess, motivation to change the actual content of the stations that they own in towards the right leaning direction, and this is one way to do it. I think the other one is that, and this is in line with our findings about the change in local versus national news, is that with Sinclair's business model, they're acquiring a bunch of new stations. It becomes much more economical for them to produce content centrally and send it out to their affiliates. And that way the affiliates don't have to spend, you know, these valuable resources investigating local news and covering local things that are much more costly.
There's also a credibility thing, Josh, and you know this, that especially in smaller markets, a lot of these local anchors who have stayed around do so because they like the area, they like their families. The younger people come into a local market and they jump. You know, they want to be on CNN or they want to be at Fox or they want to be on NBC. So they jump around. But some of these longtime local anchors are the voice of authority in their community. So they have a lot of high trust level with viewers. So if Sinclair comes in and changes the content but keeps the local anchor, a lot of people are going to be persuaded by what a local anchor says or does, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, that's a really great point. So a lot of other research in media and politics has found that and Greg has done some of this research on Fox News, for example, is that when viewers are exposed to more partisan media, they themselves become more partisan. They are more likely to vote for whatever party the media is, and they have these kind of more negative views towards the other party in particular. So what you could imagine is going on in these local markets where, especially ones where the coverage has sort of changes overnight when Sinclair buys a station, is that these viewers are now kind of being exposed to this newly partisan media and they're not even really aware of it. We haven't had a chance to fully document this in research, but from what we know in the previous stuff, that this could have this sort of effect of increasing the partisanship among these people who are now watching this like newly partisan news source when it used to be like a fairly neutral kind of middle of the road kind of thing.
And Sinclair now is in a huge $3.2 billion attempted media buy with Tribune Broadcasting. For those of you listening here in our local Coachella Valley area, right here on KCOD Palm Springs, that would include KTLA in Los Angeles, also major media markets, New York, Chicago. So they would basically start controlling media content on big stations that reach a huge swath of the country.
Yeah, that's right. And one of their major stations is in D.C., and there's tons of reporting, especially from Paul Farhi at the Washington Post, about the kind of things that happens in I think it's WJLA in Washington, D.C., about the kind of stories that they're forced to run about how, you know, bureaucrats are bad and all these sorts of things that are just like kind of blatantly partisan. And what you see from some of these, especially these bigger stations, is these anchors who have a little bit more clout because of the market they're in are really upset about this kind of coverage. They don't think it's fair. You know, their friends and families are, you know, these federal workers who are being covered negatively. And I think that's like a really interesting effect of this as well, especially at the local level.
Well, you know, too, Josh McCrane, one of the things that's also going on with Sinclair, and we'll talk about this, and I know you saw it, that infamous fake news thing that they all read. For those of you unaware of it, it was really, really well done as a mashup, but every anchor at a Sinclair station had to read a statement saying that they were journalistically in touch with their community and were anti-fake news. You and I both know that fake news now has become a nebulous term to also include facts that I disagree with. So, you know, that was kind of frightening to see that, and it was an excellent mashup job on that video, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is really crazy. It's definitely a different kind of media environment that we're kind of living in right now.
Well, people will always say, and now you study this, Josh, and you're a political science guy, will always say media's been partisan. I know in the 19th century, many of the newspapers got their names like the Arizona Republican or something like that. But we haven't seen this type of division of the media in this country in well over 100 years. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the question about media partisanship is interesting because we do have this really long tradition of having, you know, blatantly partisan media. Like you said, every newspaper was pretty much belonged to a party. But, you know, what's different now is that these media outlets are not advertising themselves as such. They're trying to come off as, you know, fair, balanced, neutral, that sort of thing, when it seems to be that that's not clear. And, you know, this is happening from the right and left. This isn't just a right-wing thing. And that is where it sort of gets into this. It operates through this mechanism where people are, you know, absorbing and watching and these media sources that are partisan, but they're not, they don't really necessarily know that they're partisan, or they have an ability to say that, no, this is actually the true message is not a partisan source, whereas in the past, it was kind of clear what the partisanship was.
Well, you know, I grew up, because I'm a little older than you, Josh, and I grew up with the major three network anchors. So if I watched Howard K. Smith on ABC or Frank Reynolds on ABC, Hunkley, Brinkley, NBC, or Walter Cronkite on CBS, and if I had a conservative neighbor or a progressive neighbor, we all shared the same news reality. Now it is so easy to go into a bubble. I always say this with the students here at COD. If I watch Fox News, listen to talk radio, listen to Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, and then I listen to NPR and watch MSNBC, I have an entirely different view of the country than my neighbor. Isn't that true?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. And there's a lot of really interesting research on, you know, misinformation and conspiracy theories and stuff that kind of builds on that premise. It's like once you are willing to accept these basic ideas that are probably not right, or you just live in this kind of bubble where everything you hear is confirming your prior beliefs. It's confirmation bias. You just seek out sources of information that confirm what you already think. It becomes really insidious in terms of the effect it has on your viewpoints about politics and especially about the other party.
Well, it was interesting, Josh. I don't know if you saw this, but the other day on a Fox News program, the host used Rush Limbaugh clips to question a Republican congressman about the investigation of special counsel Robert Mueller. And to me, and I could be wrong on this, and I hope you'll correct me if I am, why would you quote Rush Limbaugh on a news program about an investigation? It doesn't seem like that's really a journalistic type deal.
Yeah, I didn't know about that. That's kind of interesting. I think it's just probably something that they hope that it'll appeal to their viewers.
Now, you've studied Sinclair. As you know, there are reports that they're interested, if this merger goes through, of basically starting some sort of cable outlet that will rival Fox. I mean, there was a report in the trade press yesterday that they've been meeting with representatives of Sean Hannity, possibly to get him to jump. And I wouldn't be surprised if Bill O'Reilly resurfaced over there. Do you think that's their long-term goal, is to set up a rival cable network?
You know, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. It seems like that's kind of what they're trying to do through this, the way that they centralize and produce this content and then distribute it to their affiliates. They kind of already have the groundwork in place to do that sort of thing, especially if they're able to like unify on a message. But you know, it's probably, we've seen how financially successful Fox has been and in general, you know, partisan media outlets like MSNBC is doing phenomenally right now. Like they lead their, a lot of like, you know, Chris Hayes and, Rachel Maddow and stuff. They lead their time block in terms of ratings, which was not the case during the Obama administration. So partisan media is a really good business model right now.
You know, what's interesting, Josh McCrane, and maybe you can speak to this. There is Fox, which is conservative, MSNBC, which is liberal. When there is a legitimate, I shouldn't say legitimate, but when there is a news story that is nonpartisan, that is a breaking news story, say like the Hawaii volcano, isn't it amazing that a lot of the viewers of both Fox and MSNBC will immediately go to CNN? because their ratings on those type of things go right through the roof.
I didn't know that. That is actually a really interesting phenomenon. I wonder what drives that.
Well, I think what drives it is that sometimes we in the media underestimate the audience. And they kind of, so I think some of the audience kind of gets the deal. But I agree with you about this local ownership, because one of the things that the local media is important for is covering local stories.
Right.
And the national stories are very low-hanging fruit. I mean, I always, when I worked in local media markets, always tried to, well, this is the biggest one I've, I mean, this is the longest one I've ever worked in, tried to know what's happening locally. And with the rise of cable, with the rise of satellite radio, all these things, you lose that local component. And I think that's vital to the community, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think to us, that's one of the biggest implications of this research and kind of why it's important to understand these things. And there's been other scholars, Danny Hayes, Jim Lawless, some other people who've studied newspapers and what happens when newspapers go away in an area. And what they find is that voters are less informed about, you know, local issues, who the candidates are, and they likely have, they kind of are less likely to hold these people accountable. So you can imagine it has these really important downstream outcomes about, you know, holding your local officials accountable, people's propensity to vote, how much they know about who they're voting for at the local level. And I think that's what's really interesting and important about not only, you know, the TV news, but also, you know, newspapers and the newspapers.
Absolutely. Well, what I learned, for example, you guys being out of Emory University, which is in Atlanta, is say if there's a big story in Valdosta, Georgia, what I learned a long time ago in radio is that if I wanted to find out about it and I'm producing a radio show, yes, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution will have a better written story than the Valdosta General, but the Valdosta General person, the reporter there, will actually know a lot more about the story because they're locally there. Do you find that to be the case as well?
I mean, I can't back that up, but it seems right. And you know, again, I think this is why, you know, what people have uncovered about newspapers is probably similar in terms of what's going on. And if these stations, these TV stations start covering less local stuff, especially because, you know, people do trust these stations a lot. They're still a very common news source for a large portion of the country.
Well, the thing about television news, especially local TV news in smaller markets, people don't always get this, but they usually do a half an hour. They may do a national, then a half an hour, and then they run the Big Bang Theory, whatever syndicated stuff they're running. And the difference is that in reality, they don't have a half an hour. You know this, Josh, between the feature story about penguins dancing at the zoo and the sports and the weather and the commercials, they may have 5 to 10 minutes to cover a local story. And if you insert national commentary in that, you really are cutting out you're cutting out a high percentage of local coverage.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's why what we uncover is going on. This is why they spend 25% less time on local politics, is because it's being replaced by national coverage. And another thing that we found, that's actually not in the paper, is that they also spend, these Sinclair stations spend more time covering things like natural disasters. And it's probably for the same reason. It's just these kind of easier to cover, you know, local or big national stories.
Yeah, it is. Sinclair also set up kind of like an affiliate sharing thing. So as you point out, if there's like a tidal wave that hits Cape Cod, they have a station that's up there in New England. They do the feed and then send it to everybody. Is that how they work it?
You know, I'm actually not really sure about that. That's a good question. The only thing that I do know is that they write these, and this is what was covered in the Washington Post story, is they write these segments and just distribute them all. They either write the actual language the reporters use and send it out, or they actually film the segments at their headquarters and send it out.
Yeah, and that's so dishonest because I don't know if they do it in there. I don't want to indict them. I've seen other stations that do that, and they don't identify where it comes from either, correct? Mm-hmm. Like, they'll do a story like, say, a measles outbreak could kill millions or something like that. And the story, what I get a kick out of is a story is obviously filmed in a different region. So we're in California. So you may hear a story when filmed and everybody's talking like they're on Mayberry RFD. So you know it's not local, yet they don't brand it as where it's from. Is that somewhat what Sinclair does once in a while, too?
I mean, yeah, it doesn't seem to me that they really make any effort to, I mean, and this was in that Deadspin video that showed all the reporters reading the same stuff. It's definitely not meant to be tailored to individual communities. And then there's been a whole bunch of interesting stories that have come out once, you know, it became really, Sinclair kind of blew up in terms of its popularity of this kind of phenomenon, about what they make their, you know, the kind of contracts they make the reporters sign and all these sorts of things that kind of solidify that this business model is that it's supposed to be centrally controlled. They're supposed to toe the company line and that sort of thing.
Josh McCrane, for a media company, the Smith family's awfully quiet. They never seem to want to grant any interviews. Is that kind of interesting?
Yeah, I mean, especially if they really do have, you know, on the one hand, maybe they actually are doing this so that they can kind of not do what, you know, Murdoch and these people have done and just say like, oh yeah, we're just producing news. I mean, this is what they say, right? This is what they say in interviews is that, oh, we're just producing local news. We're just, you know, we changed the business model, that sort of thing. So that could be one reason they're doing it.
Well, they also may be taking a page from the Mercer family, which finances Breitbart. And, you know, that really wasn't known until the last couple of years that they did that, because they try to fly under the radar, too. They just, you know, I guess one of the Smiths got arrested for some stupid thing years ago, which was mildly entertaining. But other than that, you don't hear much about them. Are they... were you able in your study that you did, and we'll get a link to that so people can talk, go read it. When you did your study with Gregory Martin at Emory, did you get to find out how the actual field reported? Did anybody speak to you on background, how the Sinclair broadcasters feel about this?
We didn't end up reaching out to anybody about this, but I will say that, especially, you know, as this became a big deal and, you know, Trump started tweeting about it, there's been a lot of, stories across the country about this. Like, for example, I did an interview for, the Seattle PI, and in that piece, he interviewed some of the local Seattle anchors on, I think, anonymity, who worked for the Sinclair stations, and they're in general very, you know, displeased with this. They're upset. They think it's, you know, ruining their credibility. And there's not much that these anchors can do because of the contracts they have with Sinclair. They can't really leave. They have these like a lot of them have these like no compete clauses where they can't work for other stations in the market. There's all sorts of things in these contracts that is just really crazy. And I think that's something that Sinclair does really well and is only now becoming kind of really publicized.
And as we've said a lot earlier, Josh, and I'm Steve Kelly, this is Media Spotlight on KCOD. We're talking with Josh McCrane of Emory University about a survey he did with Greg Martin about Sinclair broadcasting and ownership in small television markets. As we said earlier, so many of these anchors are identified with the city they work in. So if Josh McCrane's my local anchor in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, he's been there 15 years. We grew up with Josh. We're going to believe and trust everything he says.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely how I remember growing up, watching the local news every morning with my, you know, my mom before school, is you had the anchors that you know. So it would be pretty jarring to see them start reading this, like, really blatantly partisan content, for sure.
And also, like, when Sinclair, they ran, Josh, you were probably a youngster then, but we talked about John Kerry. During his campaign, they ran that Swift Boat Veterans for Truth documentary as a news piece. So it's kind of like up front, that was unsafe at any speed or whatever the name of that thing was. They really don't hide what they're doing, but in a way they do hide it by you know, so... What is the end game here? Have there been complaints to the FCC from smaller markets about them?
That's a good question. There's actually a lot of really interesting things going on at the FCC level that's allowed them to grow like this. I mean, you probably know about this, but the reason they've been allowed to grow, and not just the Tribune Media, they acquired Bonten Media stations in September of last year. Is because they have a friendly FCC that's kind of gotten rid of a lot of these loopholes that has made it both financially and legally feasible for them to do this. So, like, one of the things that the FCC used to require of local stations was you had to have a physical building within the locality of the media market. The FCC's gotten rid of that rule. So now Sinclair is able to acquire all these stations and shut down the like the physical locations of some of these places in the media market. So there's all sorts of really interesting things about the regulatory politics of this that have been enabled by the Trump-controlled FCC.
And the interesting thing, too, is that if they go ahead with their plans to purchase Tribune, I forgot to mention this, Josh, one of the stations they would control is WGN, which is on a huge amount of cable. That would be their outlet for a national cable channel, I would believe.
Yeah, that's crazy. I hadn't actually thought about that, but that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I mean, and you know, the other thing is that there's also been these guidelines about how many stations one ownership group is allowed to have within a media market. And that's been what's keeping Sinclair from growing in the past. And which is why that, you know, they're going to go from reaching something like 35% of American households to like 72%.
Right.
If this goes through, and that's like, WGN would be, I guess, probably even make that larger.
Well, WGN would, as would KTLA and WPI in Los Angeles and WPIX in New York. The interesting thing will be is that if this merger does go through and they change the content in the bigger markets, especially New York, Chicago, and LA, where it's a little, I don't want to say different, but it is different. New York is where the money comes from. LA is where the creativity comes from. And Chicago is a major city. It would be interesting to see how news like they're running on these smaller markets would work there, wouldn't it be?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, one thing that would be really interesting to see is if you did see this, you know, viewer response where you see this like drop in viewership, especially among some of these bigger markets, which would indicate, you know, to us that there is some audience backlash to these changes in content.
Well, once they go into New York and LA, the first thing their sales reps are going to do is go to the major, you know, advertising buyers like Katz and so on and so forth, and, you know, immediately try to get some national ads. Josh, where can people link to this great study that you did?
Yeah. So we have there's a couple places. We wrote a Washington Post piece on this in the Monkey Cage blog in April. You can find that by Googling us. There's a paper on my website, Joshua McCrane, MCCRAIN.com. And then my colleague Gregory Martin at Emory also has it on his website. So if you just Google, you know, our name and the study in Sinclair, you can definitely find it. It's gotten some coverage recently, which was sort of serendipitous for us because it came out. We released it about the same time as that Deadspin video came out. So
yeah,
Donald Trump tweeted about Sinclair. So we've gotten a little bit of coverage because of that.
And as I said, we here at Media Spotlight became aware of it through a recent Washington Post article about Johnstown, Pennsylvania, that was sent to us by Lisa McCree from our old friend on KTLA in Los Angeles, actually, or KTTV rather in LA. So, and Good Morning America. So thank you so much for appearing on the program, Josh. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for talking to me about this. It was really fun.
All right. Thank you. That's Josh McCrane of Emory University. And go check out that survey if you get a chance. I hope that you enjoyed listening to us right here on Media Spotlight. I'm Steve Kelly. Now, remember, if you like this program or any of our programs right here on KCOD Coachella FM, all you got to do is go to our website at kcodcoachellafm.com. We are so excited to bring you this program. And remember, we are you. Stay tuned for more great programming right here.